From the Evening Standard in London, I'm David Marsland, and this is The Leader. Nothing to hide, stand for the smother, suffered and cried. Professor Green, musician, documentarian, restaurant owner. The 37-year-old from Hackney is hard to define, which makes him fascinating to speak to. The Evening Standard's Jimmy Famuera caught up with him for the latest edition in our lockdown sessions. They talk about the impact of the pandemic on our mental health, how our young people are losing out on valuable life lessons by not seeing their friends, and the launch of his pop-up pizza house Giz and Green in Shoreditch, which opened in the middle of the COVID crisis. An extended video version of this interview is available on our YouTube channel. Just search for The Evening Standard.
For today's lockdown sessions conversation, I'm joined, I'm very happy to say, by Professor Green, a.k.a. Stephen Manderson. How are you?
Stephen Manderson, a.k.a. Professor Green, whichever way around.
Stephen Manderson, a.k.a. Professor Green.
It's funny, I get called Stephen more now than I do Pro.
I know. Yeah, I was going to ask that. Which do you prefer?
Oh, Stephen, I'm not like Meatloaf, who walks around insisting on being called Meat, which I do kind of love. When I got the name Professor Green at 18, it was funny because people who knew me as Stephen would call me Pro P. And then as I started to do well in music much later on, some 10 years later, I've definitely done my 10,000 hours.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, who I didn't know, calling me by my government, going, Stephen, like, on the roads. And I turn around and be like, I always felt like I was in trouble instantly. You know what I mean? And I'm like, do I know you? Not in a rude way, but like, because you know, it was weird.
Yeah, it seems like it brings a familiarity. But
yeah, I guess that's my fault for being so personable.
I think so, yeah. But you joke, but you are personable and you are a amazing advocate for better conversations about, among many things, mental health. And that was that's something that we want to be the focus of this conversation. And you've, you know, as well as being a musician, you've been the figurehead of these acclaimed documentaries and films that have tackled everything from child poverty to suicide and to the white working class and disenfranchised men in the UK. Obviously, we are talking over Zoom. We are in the midst of the third lockdown that it's had a, I don't think anyone could argue that it's had a detrimental effect on people's mental health. How do we go about looking towards solutions and making sure that the pain that's already been caused isn't, you know, isn't furthered as we kind of continue to work our way through this thing?
I think it's incredibly challenging. I think what we're going to see is the continuing effects of what this has caused as far as people's mental health and well-being. You know, people have lost their lives, people have lost their relatives. I mean, it's going to be incredibly difficult to manage. I think encouraging people to seek help is important, but it's facilitating the people that need help that's going to be the challenge. You know, you look at how overstretched our services are now. My partner's sister is, she's a surgeon on the NHS, and the hospitals are, you know, people are doing double shifts. You know, they're being moved from, because there's no elected surgeries, they're being moved into A&E, and they're having to work double shifts.
How do you think that there's a lot of talk at the moment, particularly about young children and missing out on school and the things that you miss out on just from kind of attending classes in person and people falling through the cracks?
I mean, as far as, you know, education, people can catch up. I think if you were in an exam year, it's probably had more of an impact.
Yeah.
I think education wise, people can catch up, but I think the lessons we learn from each other as kids, you know, are what people are missing out on. I mean, imagine being a kid and being, you know, the fear of contact.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And not being able to see their grandparents. Why is it not okay for me to hug Nan? Why is it not okay for me to hug Granddad?
Yeah.
You know, why can't I see my friends? What questions, you know, you can answer for children, but they don't really have the tools to navigate this situation in a way that we do as adults.
Yeah. And
with that said, it's hard enough as an adult. You know, you can say, oh, the kids, they're oblivious. They're sponges. They're absorbing all of this. And it's probably, I can imagine it's quite stressful for everyone that's having to homeschool, or everyone that has the fear of, you know, people who are working on the front line. My partner's sister, she has a child. He has to go to nursery. So she's working on the front line. He's going to nursery. Someone comes, you know, there's I think there's just a lot of fear everywhere.
Yeah.
Not helped by repeatedly being bashed over the head every time you turn the news on with, you know, figures, horrible, horrible figures without any context.
Yeah. It's kind of unrelenting. And I think that's the real noticeable thing about this particular lockdown, that there's no kind of end in sight. And we're kind of trying to find bits of hope wherever we can. You mentioned there homeschooling. That's definitely something that, you know, we've had to navigate in my house, and trying to work at the same time, and everything's happening in the same space, in the same room. So that's definitely something that I have found challenging, to say the least.
You end up having a weird relationship with your house, because this was solace, you know, this was my safe place. This was where, when I shut the door, the rest of the world stayed outside. Obviously, I have to, like, I work on music and stuff at home, and there's bits that I'll do at home, but largely I was able to do most of my work elsewhere. Now, you know, I don't want to associate home with the stresses of work, of which there are many, you know, be it a gulp or Giz and Greens. They're two startups. There's a hell of a lot of work that has to be done, and it's stressful. And then that has an impact on your relationship, because you're coming off of a phone which has stressed you out, and you wouldn't normally have that conversation in earshot of your partner, straight away then have the conversation and relay everything that's just happened on it. And then it's like, this stuff shouldn't be bleeding into our relationship. So you've got people at home who are suffering all of these things. I mean, we're lucky we have space, but we are still somewhat on top of each other, right? Which is just different. It's a really, we're going to look back on it and be happy that we were able to spend this much time together, because there'll probably never be another time in our lives when we will.
Yeah.
But I don't need to say that it doesn't present issues. And for people in, you know, when I think about how I grew up, there were six of us in a 3-bedroom flat. If I was in that situation now, how would I navigate that?
There's a growing feeling that there should be money devoted to well-being, just kind of making sure that everyone's kind of okay in terms of the trauma that we've all kind of gone through varying degrees. And sort of, I wonder, do you think that that's something that should be put in place? And is it as simple as here's some money?
No, nothing ever is it? Mm. Nothing, throwing money at stuff is never, you know, I mean, obviously things cost money. So to facilitate the support that people are going to need, we're going to need money, but just throwing money at something doesn't, I mean, I just think we, you know, we all too often, we have a government that will be seen to be doing just enough to be seen to be doing something, but never actually doing quite enough. You know, I've heard politicians say they're proud of our food banks. It wasn't something that made me very happy when I heard that. It's like, I'm proud of the people that volunteer.
Yeah.
And I was at a food bank in Streatham recently. And it's the size, I forget the name of the church, but it's the size of a small supermarket. But most of the donations are personal donations.
Right, wow.
They're not from corporation.
Mm.
And most of their workers are volunteers. Mm. They have 150 people working there. Yeah. And they can only facilitate half of the demand.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is not people, I think there's a really sort of shallow parody of the working class and of those less privileged, and the picture of someone who uses a food bank.
Yeah.
The reality of it is much different.
In part two of our exclusive chat with Professor Green, Jimmy talks to him about the launch of Giz and Green. Let's do an ad break now. Hit subscribe to hear the leader every day at 4 p.m. In this part of our lockdown session with Professor Green, Jimmy talks to him about the negative effects of social media on our mental health and why he opened a restaurant during a pandemic. Jimmy is the Evening Standard's chief food critic, after all.
Positive things that you can do and ways to build up or maintain a social network at this time and get that kind of interaction with people. And it does seem that Giz and Greens, which was born from your Monday night fake away, was it?
Yeah, when I was stuck in Morocco and Gizzy was teaching me how to make all of my favorite takeaways.
This is your skin, and it's kind of transformed into something that, I mean, how has it, what has this been like for you, like personally, to have come through this experience with a new kind of line of you're now a restaurateur, and now you're
I feel so lucky. We opened the restaurant right in between, I think it was between the first and the second lockdown, and I thought I was like, Gizzy, we're crazy. And she was like, we're doing it, because we were going to start out with a pizza delivery business. So it was going to be a virtual brand and delivery only. And then we got the opportunity to do the pop-up at Paso on Old Street. I was like, Gizzy, this is a big old place. Like, are you sure we should be opening a pizza pop-up in the middle of a pandemic? She's like, we're doing it. Okay, all right, I'm going to follow your lead on this one. And it would, you know what, it actually went in our favor, because we didn't have to do any work in the restaurant as far as socially distancing people, because it was so big that people were by default socially distanced. Yeah. We sold over 16,000 pizzas in 2 months. It was insane, like the response to it. And you know, it's quite a refined pizza. Mm. You know, we use a rye bigger, proper sourdough. It's proof for 2 days at the bread station where we get our dough from in Hackney. You know, so we were able to facilitate it. At the same time, it wasn't just about us having success as a restaurant. We were able to unfurlough people. Yeah. We were able to give people business, and this is what's forgotten, right? I saw a meme the other day about the hospitality industry being to blame for the snow or something. And I was like, it's been, you know, the hospitality industry is such a huge contribution to this country. Yeah. And actually it's quite weird when you think about the places where COVID is spreading versus the places that have shut down, because actually where you're forced to sit in a restaurant that is socially distanced and people are obeying rules, it seems, make sense to me that.
Yeah. Well, I think that the point there about unfurloughing people and then giving them a sense of calm and sort of helping their mental health and enabling them to sort of be able to work and contribute. And it seems like for you, it was really important as well in terms of being able to be active and to be able to do something, and something born from crisis, really. Like, and that's,
you know what, that's been the story of my life, Jimmy. Mm. That's literally everything in my life has been born from crisis. Almost everything. it's probably one of my better talents.
Taking
something bad and putting a positive spin on it.
Where do you fall on the side of social media and its kind of impact on people's mental well-being at this time, and sort of the use of it, and personally, how have you navigated it? Obviously, you've got huge following on Twitter and Instagram especially, and it's clearly given you so much, but do you have a love hate with it? Do you kind of turn it off sometimes forcibly?
I've social media is a bit like a gun. bear with me. A gun doesn't kill anyone on its own. You know, it has to be picked up, aimed and fired, doesn't it? Social media is something that we choose to use. I don't think it in itself is negative. I hope in the years to come, we're going to look back and think, Jesus, we had this incredible way of connecting everyone on the planet, and we used it so, so, so stupidly for vanity and for, you know, it was completely mispurposed. And then we'll get it right. Because it is wonderful, right? There's no doubt about it. When used correctly, it is one of the most incredible things in the world. But then there's like, you have almost everything at your fingertips, and you end up looking at bloody videos of cats that are scared of cucumbers. My cat, by the way, is not scared of cucumbers. I tried to scare her with one and she wasn't scared.
Sure, yeah. Great content if she was.
Right. But most searched thing on the internet, apparently, cats and babies. But I think I think it comes down to consumption, man. Like, if you've seen Super Size Me, you know what happens if you have McDonald's for every meal every day. It's no good for you. My great grandmother always used to say, a little bit of what you like won't hurt you. Mm. Sort of true. Over time, things, you know, can accumulate, and they will. But I think it is down to your control of your consumption. It's like the news, you know, I don't watch the news as often as I would normally, because I cannot bear to be affected. the way I didn't realize I was was initially, because it was so negative. You can't watch something that negative and that repetitive and not be affected by it. So for my own well-being, I switched off. I like being up to date on current affairs, but I choose which channels I use to keep up to date on things outside of Corona.
Because
I can't bear to see the numbers and statistics. The most, I think the one thing that we could all encourage each other to do is just take care of each other. If there's any good to come from it, it's, you know, maybe we made an effort to look after each other.
Yeah.
Kind of weird. It's the first time in our lifetimes that the entire world has suffered the same thing at the same time. And I don't know, we don't feel any more connected.
Same situation. You were stuck at home. You were sort of going through it at a time when a lot of people in the public eye have kind of...
In Dubai.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, to sort of maybe play devil's advocate for a moment, we're talking about mental health and people struggling. A lot of people will probably, they might say that, oh, they needed that, or they were in a bad place or whatever. Like, how do you kind of approach that as someone in the public eye? And obviously we've seen a few celebrities and notable people get in trouble for kind of not necessarily following the rules in the same way. Like, how have you navigated that through this time, and how do you feel about people, the sort of the Dubai set that kind of seemingly went off there and camped out there to sort of
I just think I'm going to be honest, yeah, and listen, there's people I know that this might offend, but I think people are tone deaf. Like, are you not looking at what's going on in the rest of the world? Same way, enjoy yourself. Do what you're doing and do what you can do, right? That's all any of us can do, really. And I get that side of it. But same way, I think, like, it just, some of it just feels a bit tone deaf. Like, people are suffering. Like, people are suffering anyway, way before COVID. You know what I mean? Like, and I just, I think sometimes people lose track of the vibe a little bit. They get a little bit lost as to what the actual,
that's the point at which your background glitches out and it reveals that you're actually in like Abu Dhabi, or like you're on a beach somewhere and you've.
Hey, I would love nothing more than to be on a beach, but it's not the time for it, man.
It's
not the time for it. You know, I do as much as I have to and as little as I have to, if that makes sense. I think the one thing that we could all encourage each other to do is just take care of each other. If there's any good to come from it, it's, you know, maybe we made an effort to look after each other.
Yeah.
Kind of weird. It's the first time in our lifetimes that the entire world has suffered the same thing at the same time. And I don't know, we don't feel any more connected.
And that's the leader. If you've been affected by anything in this edition, there is help out there. Call Mind on 0300 123 3393. That's 0300 123 3393. The leader is back tomorrow at 4 p.m.